Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends. And Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 41. Yeah, so it's Friday, it's not Thursday, so I'll come to the reason why this is a day late. If you've been waiting for this episode to drop, then my apologies that it is a day late. I hope you're all doing well, I hope you are having a good week so far. This is a waffle episode, so no major content coming. This is probably going to be a bit shorter, but knowing me and how I waffle, you're probably still in for 20 minutes. So, I am about, what are we now, Friday evening. So, in 2 days' time, I will be packing up and I'll be getting in my 981 Cayman, my Outlaw Cayman, and I will be driving to Folkestone. And that is because my ring trip, my Euro trip, starts this weekend. To say I'm excited is a massive understatement. This is... after last year's massive, mega, super road trip around the Alps to Monaco, to Cannes, to the Col de Torini, to the Route Napoleon, to Col de la Bonnette, you name it, I did it. I came back from that absolutely buzzing about what happens next. This is the what happens next. So, yeah, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what that route entails and where I'm going, who I'm going with, and the reasons why it's very exciting. But for now, though, let's get through some of the early bits and pieces and why. Let's talk about why this was late first. So, in my excitedness and eagerness to take my car on a road trip, I thought I would look at a couple of technical things on my car whilst it was at Barnsport Porsche. My good friend Scott Gardner and James as well, the owners of Barnsport Porsche in Blandford Forum, they are the only people I trust with my car. Apart from me working on it, the only people that work on that car are them. Now, I was doing some research on Planet 9 and Renlist and, you know, general internet, and noticed a couple of things that I'd like to do with my car. There are options you can unlock. One of them is the GT3, and there's variations of it, but a steering map update. So effectively you use the PWIS tool, which is, if you don't know, that is all, in fact, this goes for all manufacturers really with cars. They have a proprietary laptop with software on it that's developed by the manufacturer that allows you to go and interrogate all the engine management and computer systems within the car, basically within all cars. It typically uses the OBD port. So again, if you just not to teach eggs, granny sucking eggs, if that makes any sense to anybody outside of the UK, I do apologize if it doesn't. That just means basically telling you what you already know. Yeah, your OBD port is a small socket that normally lives in either of the front or either side footwell, behind some sort of cover normally. You pull that off and then you plug a diagnostic tool into this socket, and then you fire up the computer, laptop, normally like a Toughbook or something similar to that. And by doing that, you can interrogate all of the computer systems and you can find out all the data, live data of the car, what's happening with it. If you have a light on your dashboard, like I did, you can find out exactly what that fault code is that relates to that fault. And then it will, the really good ones, the intelligent ones, can tell you what that fault is. Not just, because fault codes will narrow it down to a particular area. But the really intelligent computers and the really clever stuff with CAN bus will tell you exactly what that fault is, and whether it's, like in my case, a driver's airbag that was open circuit. So yeah, so the GT3 steering map, we did that. That's a really easy thing to do. Barnsport, so Scotty did this, jumped on PWIS, which is the proprietary system for Porsche, and you go through a couple of go through a couple of lists, and then you select a different type of setting for the ECU that controls the steering. So it's electronic power steering, electrical power steering. There is a brain that does that for you. Now, one of the criticisms of the 981 generation Porsche Boxster and Cayman has always been slightly numb or dead feeling feedback of the steering wheel. So everybody immediately jumped to the 987.2 or .1 is the way to go because it's still hydraulic steering. So passive system. So your steering input is controlled through hydraulics, and then that affects what the steering does, the steering input. So it's pretty linear. Weighting is really good. Texture and feedback is really good. By moving to ePass, it did change things. And the 981 always got a bit of critique around the fact that it's a great car, handles fantastically, but the steering feedback's a little bit woolly. Did I ever think that? I don't think I ever really thought it was as big a deal as people were making out. I think if you probably got a GT3 or something, you know, quite significantly more advanced in terms of the setup, the way it's all designed, you're probably going to notice that. If you've come off the back of a Cayman R, for example, which for me is the peak of 987 generation Cayman or Boxster, the Boxster Spider for that generation, you're probably going to notice it doesn't feel quite as good. But then you compare that to the 718, and then people started saying actually the 718 has improved. Well, I think for everybody, it got them thinking, what material is different between the 981 and the 718? Basically nothing. The chassis is the same chassis. It's just a rebody and a midlife update. So then you start asking questions around the fact, well, if there's no massive difference, yet it feels noticeably different, the steering is more responsive, then it's probably software coding or firmware, or there's something in there that can be changed with relative ease to make that better. I can't claim that I did this, by the way. Somebody else out there found it through hacking, through PUIs, and noticed that you could actually set that module to a number of different options. One of those options is GT3. The feedback universally has been brilliant. It is radically different. Now, I'm cynical with these things, but I'm willing to give things a go, especially if there's minimum cost impact. But it's hard to believe that it's not going to make a difference when you've got universal praise for something, especially when people aren't paying a great deal of money. It's not like people are sort of in that sunk cost fallacy where they've spent $4,000 on something and then they're telling you I use IPD plenums for this, by the way. You spent a load of money, you've installed it, and it's not giving you what you really know you should have had, because you've spent the money, you're kind of lured into the, you don't want to look silly, so you just say it's great. Well, this doesn't cost very much money, or any money, really. And it was universal praise. So I jumped on the bandwagon, talked to Scotty about it. Scotty had done it before, and the guy that he'd done it before also said it was great. What we've got to lose. So that was a really, really dead simple thing to do. A couple of menus and off you go. Save some settings, come out, leave the, pull the socket out of the OBD port and off we go. Let's talk about what my feelings and thoughts are with that, because I had a couple of questions through Instagram, at Rengineering UK on Instagram, by the way, at Rengineering on Facebook and TikTok and Threads and everywhere else. It's immediately noticeable. It is immediately noticeable, and I would say what you got before, and it was really because I'd spent, obviously, if you're new to the channel, you might not know, but if you've been around for a while, then you will. Coming up to 6 years, five and a half years with that car, so good best part of 30,000 miles. So I know exactly how my car handles on different tires, worn out tires versus new ones, all sorts of stuff. We inspected the bushings for the whole car. Everything's in perfect order, so there's no looseness, there's nothing needs to be replaced. Springs, shocks, everything's in great order, so you can pretty much confidently say that car's a good test bed, because you're not kind of dealing with other issues that are masking or changing how this actually feels. Try to be as scientific as possible. And so what you had before, in my opinion, was it was blown out of all proportion, but you did notice a strange weighting and correction in the steering. So if you were at low speed, for me anyway, it felt, I don't want to make it sound massively different because it's not life changing, but there was definitely a wooliness at the sort of neutral dead ahead position and steering input that's quite sort of immediate. So pulling off 10-15 miles an hour, that the weighting is massively different there. It's much lighter. And some people complain about that. Like, oh, I don't like it because it feels lighter at low speeds. Actually, what I would say is it's linear. What I think you had before was almost a heaviness at low speed, which is really counterintuitive. Heaviness at low speed, but as you increased speed, it lightened up. Now, you get that anyway to an extent. So if you think back to the days before power steering even existed, that's exactly what you'd have, because you're steering input would be counterbalancing or counteracting the force through the steering, through the wheels, through the tires, all that weight that you're moving around, and then the contact patch with the tire and the ground. At low speed, obviously, you've got to increase your torque, your force through that to be able to get the tires to move. And as you speed up, you don't need so much torque and force. Well, similarly, that's what it felt like in the 981. But typically people think about that as a good thing, that you get sort of heaviness at low speed and it kind of lightens up. But it was slightly too much both sides, right? It was too light at speed and too heavy at low speed. Whereas what this has done is almost like it feels like it's perfected both parts of that equation. At low speed, it's much lighter. So it's easier to just pull away, and it's, you know, that, which you don't, you know, you're not really sort of in driver's mode at that point, right? So that's not a bad thing. But what you get is this really lovely linear feeling all the way through to high speed. And when you're leaning into it, you get this lovely kind of balance. That's what I would say, is it's the balance and the feedback and the texture of the, it all feels like it's, like it should be. That's how it should have come from the factory. I would love to back to back a 718 now I've got my car like that. So drive my car, hop into a 718 GTS 4 liter, because my wheels are exactly the same, so tire width, everything else is going to be the same, and just see what the back to back looks like, and actually whether that's what they did for the 718 GTS or even 718 in general. So that's the GT3 steering change and the update I did there. Totally recommend it if you have a 981 next time your car. I'm not sure I'd go to the extent of making a special effort to go and get it done, but because you'll probably pay, you know, a full hour rate or something. But if your car's going in for service anyway, definitely speak to your independent and see if they'll do that for you. Will an official Porsche center do this for you? Not in a million years. I don't think they would do it in a million years. You can ask if you've got a particularly friendly Porsche center, but I would be very surprised if they're willing to do, you know, to set anything that's not factory settings. They don't even like you putting grills on your front bumper to stop the stone, you know, the radiators getting stone chipped to death. So the likelihood of them reconfiguring, you know, engine management units in your car, can't see it. But do get it done if you're going to an indie and you're not quite so bothered about maintaining warranty. No disrespect to those people that are maintaining a warranty. That's entirely up to you, of course. It's just your preference for risk. I think the 981 generation, in fact, all 981 and 78s, so they've been proven to be pretty robust. So I think you could probably, it's a healthy gamble with that. So that's that then. That's the GT3 steering input. What else did I do at the same time? I wanted to look at the angle of attack of the ducktail spoiler that I have on my car. It is effectively, it's not an original equipment part, and I tried to fit all original equipment parts, but the GT4 ducktail that you get on 981 GT4s, it doesn't fit, nor does the spider, because the end cap profile is different on the spider as well. So it's not a straightforward one-for-one swap, sadly. So I purchased what turned out to be a really bloody great offering that's aftermarket. It was off eBay. It came painted from China. The things that I have bought that have been really successful come from sort of the East, the head unit that I bought, the Ericsson head unit, and this spoiler, you put your paint code in, cross your fingers, pay 330 quid, I think it was, 330 British pounds, and then wait some time. Didn't actually take that long for me. That arrived. I've talked about this before anyway on the series about the Ren Build series for My Cayman. So you can go and watch that on YouTube right now, Ren Engineering on YouTube. And you can see everything from me taking that car from completely vanilla to almost where it is now, because I've moved on since. So go and have a watch of those. But yeah, that spoiler was perfect. Loved it. Color match was amazing. Everybody comments on how great it is. Annoyingly, but it's not as a result of this spoiler, they all do that, sir, is that the spoiler is ever so slightly misaligned from the body shape. But even factory, you get that. Even from the factory, you get that. So I can't attribute that to this particular spoiler or brand. But that's not the point anyway. The point is, with the GT4 and the Spider, the spoiler doesn't raise, or it raises ever so slightly. But obviously with the standard cars, so the Cayman, the Cayman S, the GTS, they have the flat spoiler that raises up. Now what I wanted to do, and it's been done before, you can dial it out, you can set the parameters that the spoiler raises. So it raises at 75 miles an hour or whatever it is. You can set that to 300 miles an hour and it'll never rise, or you can change the angle of attack. I wanted to do a bit of a test and see which I preferred. Quite liked the idea of it raising, but ever so slightly and not actually coming all the way up. But if that didn't look right when we were doing it, the idea was that I'd have it set completely out of tolerance and it would just never come up. You could still lift it to clean it underneath. But yeah, unfortunately, one of the few things we didn't struggle with, we didn't manage to do when I was at Barnsport, is that, which, so I'm looking to look around and see what options I have to be able to dial that in. But unfortunately, the PeeWiz version that Barnsport had wasn't able to do it, despite going into developer mode or engineering mode and all those things. We spent a good 40 minutes trying to figure it out. And yeah, unfortunately, I just don't think it's compatible, that version. But what we did in that process is, and it was this is my call, right? Set it to box the Spider. And I took it away thinking I'll, you know, do a test drive and see how it got on. Didn't notice that by setting it to box the Spider, that what does the box of Spider not have? A hatch. So I drove off home, really happy, oil changed, cars checked over, pre-road trip check over, everything's going brilliantly. Got home, and my Mac was in the back of the car, by the way. In the boot, my Mac's in the boot. I've driven off, we set it to box the Spider, got home, thought, cool, right, it's Thursday, I'm going to record this episode, got some stuff to talk about. Went to hit the boot pop, nothing happened. That's strange. I wonder if the key fob is battery's dying. That happens all the time. Key fob's a bit old. Well, I'll just pop it from inside the car, lent inside the car, hit the button, absolutely nothing happened at all. That's very strange. I wonder if that switch pack's duff. Pop the front. Front popped absolutely fine. Okay, so that's weird. So the front pops, but the back doesn't pop. But it doesn't. It's not the switch pack, because the switch operates the front. I suppose you could argue that that one half of the switch pack could have failed, possibly. But then I've proved that it doesn't work because the fob operates the front but doesn't operate the back. So that tells me either something mechanical. I'm going into tech mode here, as you can tell. It tells me something mechanical has happened to the boot and it now won't release. So it could be latch, could be something like that, or we've done something since, because that was working absolutely bloody fine until I turned up and we started messing around with everything. Messaged Scotty very quickly. We realized what had been done, and it goes without saying, you know, we both were like, right, how do we quickly fix this? And unfortunately couldn't do anything remotely, so I popped back today to go and get that done. It took all of 2 minutes to just change it back to Cayman rather than box the Spider. So, but it did mean that that's why this episode is late, because I couldn't get into the boots and I couldn't get my Mac, so it means I couldn't edit anything, which means I couldn't get the O Sport Design episode out, despite that going on the podcast last week. And that's why that's not out on YouTube yet. All of that because I was faffing around with my car, wanting to make modifications to it, and such is life. So that's fixed. Oil change. Beautiful. Perfect. Happy. I love the fact that Scotty, and I've said this before, Scotty and James take great pride in making sure the order is at the absolute bang on. There's no kind of like, oh, it's close enough. It's absolutely bang on every time. The other thing, and you will probably remember me mentioning this before, is that the steering wheel, I changed the steering wheel on my car from the sport design steering wheel that comes as an option. The sport design steering wheel that comes as an option, I removed that and fitted the GT Sport steering wheel, which is off a GT3, or basically every other model car from the 718 generation. So 718s that are selected with it, they get that. So it's not the standard offering, you have to select it, or it comes standard on the GT product line. And to touch upon what I did with that as well, so I, rather than have it off the shelf, what I don't like about those steering wheels, and it's just a personal preference, is you get these little set screws, and they don't add anything for me on those steering wheels. So if you look at the kind of cutouts, effectively there's a plastic trim that sits there, and you've got these weird little screws. They do nothing. They are just a vajazzle, basically, for a steering wheel. I'd never like them. But I love the steering wheel itself. So I bought the 981 GT4 inserts, which are completely plain plastic without the little vajazzle, and fitted those instead of the vajazzle version. So I swapped out the small trims with those 981 GT4 trims that just have the plastic with no vajazzle. Much prefer that look. You get with the standard steering wheel, so now imagine you've got that GT Sport steering wheel. This is very confusing, I know, but you get a metallic silver insert trim. I wanted all black because it matches the GT2 RS and 911R, and that's what I got. So I've got like a very custom one of one. I can't imagine anyone being as anal as me without that little bit of trim. And then you've still got, what I was really keen on also, is the mode select jog wheel, or if you're a Ferrari fan, a Manettino effectively, that's also a little stalk that comes off the steering wheel. I've got no other multimedia stuff. I don't understand that with a 911 or a Cayman or Boxster. You save about an eighth of a second by moving your hand across, turning up the dial for volume. I don't get it. So I wanted a completely vanilla steering wheel apart from that one stalk. And the difference is, the reason why I am keen on that is, there is a noticeable difference. I'm in and out of modes all the time. If you don't have that Manettino on the steering wheel, then you've got to look down and just make sure that you're hitting the right button, because it's right next to PSM off, and it's right next to the exhaust switch and all that stuff. All those sport modes are all collectively in that center console, so it genuinely does make a difference if you can just twizzle a little nozzle in the middle of the steering wheel and off you go. So really, really happy with that. That steering wheel was bought second hand. If I bought a brand new one, GT Sport steering wheel, I think it was about £1,700. Way too much money. And then obviously what you need, you can't move the airbag from the old steering wheel to the new, so you need a new airbag. Airbags are horrifically expensive. So I bought a used airbag from a reputable supplier, and it did not work. It threw up an airbag light after about 5 minutes driving when I first installed it. Went back to the seller. Seller was good as gold and said, no problem at all, let me send you another one out. That must have been just a duff one-off. Absolutely fine. Waited another couple of weeks, sent me another one out again, no cost to me. Brilliant service, actually. Went to fit that one and found that the connectors on the back of the airbag were deformed, so there's no way that's getting fitted because it was clearly not right. Went back to the seller again, said, look, that's two now, can I just get a refund and I'll sort myself out. The problem is, I think I paid about £400 for this used airbag, and a new airbag, if you select the 911 or 718 generation, is about £1,000. So it's big money for that, for essentially a very small item. Took it into Scotty. So before, what I did do is fitted the first, so out of those two airbags, what I wasn't able to do at home is clear the SRS airbag light off. Because even if you've got an OBD reader, unless it's iCarSoft or one of the really kind of much more expensive versions of that, and I didn't have one of those, I had a little Bluetooth module, it won't let you clear off safety-related warning lights or DTCs. When I was going down to Barnsport, I thought, last-ditch attempt, I'll put the original airbag back in that I got, because I still had the two that guy had sent me. And we'll try doing an airbag reset at Barnsport, because they've got pivots, like I said before. That didn't do it. Talked to Scotty for sort of 10 or 15 minutes while we were just making, you know, taking some of the other bits out there, because there's a wire, it's a load of wiring behind there as well. So checked all that. And as soon as I mentioned that I bought a used airbag, Scotty was like, oh, mate, don't buy a used airbag. I can guarantee that's what the fault is. This is why specialists are so good. Yeah. So got home, licked my wounds, spoke to the seller. The seller refunded me the whole amount of money. And then I went off and ordered through Porsche Centre Portsmouth, and my good friend Ben Labercombe there, a brand new one. Now, you can, and this is a heads up if you're thinking of doing something similar. If you spec a 911 airbag, as I said, it's about 1100 quid. If you buy one from a McCann, which fits absolutely fine, the only difference is one's got a leather top, one's got a PU kind of rubberized top, then you pay around £700. So there's a saving of £300 or £400 just because of the leather front. I guess if you've got a completely leather car, you might want to kind of do that, continue that. But for me, the fact that the dash top on my car is the kind of standard plastic dash top. The underside of the dash for me on my car, I've changed it all, and that's now GT4 Alcantara, like a dark grey Alcantara, along with the door cards from a GT4 as well, and the lots of the centre console trim. But actually, the rubberized one fitted perfectly because the dash top matched. So that's what I did, and saved myself, my maths here, saved myself about £400 over the 911 version. I also, at Scotty's kind of suggestion, bought iCarSoft, which is, like I said, it's the more expensive, but it's an OBD reader that you plug into that port and you can access all the modules. You can do things also like, if you want to change your own brakes, you can do a calibration and reset of that stuff, so it learns kind of, or retracts the handbrake caliper pads away from the, it retracts them so you can actually unlock the rear brakes and then do a brake upgrade or brake change on the back of the car and then reset them. It does all of that stuff. It can do steering angle reset for steering angle sensors. It can do all sorts of stuff, including airbag resets. So for the sake of, I think it was £130 off Amazon, got iCarSoft delivered to me and then plugged that in and cleared the airbag code off once I installed that brand new airbag. Problem solved, job done, everything sorted. So now my car is ready to go to the Nürburgring. Oil's done, steering wheel's done, no lights anywhere. I can get into the boot and actually got half the storage back of the car. And it also means I can edit this and get this out for you now. Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this episode. And if you are enjoying this episode, I have a very small request to make. I'm really trying to grow the YouTube channel at the moment, and whilst it's always nice when people naturally gravitate towards it, subscribe and like and share, I'm going to actually ask you, if you're enjoying this episode and you've enjoyed the Rengineering podcast so far, to head over to YouTube and subscribe, and let me know what you think of any of those episodes and if there's anything you'd like to see in the future. But for now, I'll head back to the episode, but just that small request. Thanks, take care. What else? We're getting pretty close, really. So I think it's probably best to start talking about the actual trip itself and talk to you a bit more about that. I'm not going to share some of the stories because there are some classic stories that we'll talk about from the guys that are going on that trip with me. I'm going to share some of those with the actual episode itself. That is, if you, like I said, if you watch the My Porsche Story episode that from last year, we'll do something similar for this year, a big kind of epic episode. It'll be a 40 50 minute job rather than the sort of 20 or 30 minute ones we normally get. So this Sunday I head down to Folkestone. We've got a really early tunnel ticket. The idea of driving from where I am in Hampshire all the way across the M25 to get to Folkestone on a Monday morning is a disaster. I'm not going to try that, so I'm staying at the Hythe Imperial Hotel Sunday night. That's going to be absolutely epic. It's a lovely hotel, apparently. It's 10 minutes from the Eurotunnel, so brilliant, great start. And it's a spa hotel. One thing I learned from last year, where I stayed at the Royal Hainault or Honnault. It's a beautiful spa hotel, and it was the last day. And I really welcomed that, kind of after all that driving, just being able to chill out. And in fact, actually, the sign-off scene from my Porsche story last year is me sat on the bed doing a should you do this kind of thing in that hotel. It was bloody lovely. I loved it. I want to do more of that. So I think what I'll do on all of these road trips is either the start and the end or just the end. I'll book myself a spa hotel and have a really nice relaxing night and a bit of a chill before getting on the road the following day to jump on the train and come home again. But yeah, so day one is Highland Imperial in Folkestone, just outside Folkestone. So this trip is a mixture of petrol head stuff, gear head stuff, and me being a Band of Brothers nerd and a World War II nerd. And actually, luckily, the guys that are coming with me, Joe and his dad, Roger, they're also World War II nerds as well. So we're heading off to Bastogne or Bastogne, depending on how you pronounce it. And so if you've ever watched Band of Brothers, there is an episode based around this stuff, and I highly encourage if you've lived under a rock and you haven't watched that series before, get on it. It's brilliant. There's an episode that talks about the Battle of the Bulge, and the Battle of the Bulge is just an epic. It's an incredibly intense episode, and shares how, and there are more people, there's 7th Armored Tank Division, there's all sorts of people involved in this, or the 8th Armored Tank Division. But the 101st Airborne parachuted in and then got basically isolated in the Foy Woods in the Bastogne region, and had to basically hold that position for a number of weeks with barely any clothing, with basically no medical aid supplies, and with hardly any food as well. And they didn't lose ground in that space. It was an absolutely amazing feat of human endurance. I'm obviously a Brit, so I'm not an American, but you can't fail to, when you see, incidents like that, where, in fact, it doesn't even matter what it is or which country it is, that level of human endurance under extreme circumstances, I find that alone fascinating. So we're going to head there. We're staying there. I've got an Airbnb. I think Joe and his dad have got a hotel nearby. We're going to go and check out the shell scrapes, the dugouts that they use, because there you can still see signs of that stuff. You can still see signs of frag hitting buildings. I mean, for me, it's going to be a real kind of, pause and reflect moment. And I've mentioned the podcast and the YouTube channel before that I'm ex-military anyway, so some of this is just really interesting for me. I haven't done 2 tours of Afghanistan. So that's properly day one on the road. Wake up the next morning, and then we head to the Nürburgring. We're staying in Adenau in a nice little hotel there, all of us are. And then we're meeting up, I'm not sure exactly what day, we've got to figure it out, with Goldleaf Performance. If Goldleaf Performance, if you're not aware of who they are, they make carbon fiber parts for the 981, particularly a version of the GT4RS side intake, so the window intakes that creates that intense noise in the cabin that either people love or hate, depending on whether they want to wear earplugs for the rest of their life or eventually lose their hearing. I'm an absolute ASBO chav. You have to look up what that means if you're not from the UK. And I love it. I think it's brilliant. So I'm really interested to see what they've done. Look at the quality of that kit for myself. Obviously, for the REM 550 build, and there's stuff out on the YouTube channel now about the REM 550 you can go and watch. O Sport Designer, the collaborator and supporting company for the REM 550. But that's not to say I'm not keen on hearing and seeing what other people do. It's going to be fascinating to see what Goldleaf have managed to do with that. I can't wait to go out in that car. I can't wait to hear what a difference that makes. Will I fit one to my car? I'm going to talk to them about it. I kind of like the idea of buying original Porsche parts and seeing if I can do it myself. But I think I'll probably have a quite quick conversation with them and find out, and I'm sure they'll tell me if they could have done that with low cost, that's what they would be doing. But for them, they've gone out and developed their entire system to support all 981 generation Caymans. So will it be interested? If I had it in my car, let's face it, there is no other carbon fiber on my Cayman. I don't intend on putting carbon fiber all over my Cayman. So you'll probably think it's sacrilege, but although those side windows are carbon fiber, I would paint them. And I'll come on to that another time about why I'm painting them, but I'll paint them an anthracite grey. We'll get on to that another time. The jury's out so far. It's a bonkers amount of money for a piece of equipment, but you know, rather than just be critical because it's an expensive thing to do, I do want to find out from them, you know, how good it really is. So that's 5 days at the Nürburgring with Goldleaf, but also what I really want to do is fly the drone around. If you saw my Porsche story from last year, that epic, there's loads of drone footage. I have a drone, you know, all the right certification to fly a drone. It's all fine. You know, it's part of my day job that I work for an air traffic control service provider. So it wouldn't look very good if I didn't play the game properly. So I'm going to fly the drone around if we can get some good weather. Look for the Südschleifer, so the South Loop, parts of the track that are no longer around. We're just going to go and see if we can find out bits of historic circuit, which I really love the idea of doing that. So that plus a few laps. I can't share why doing a lap of the Nürburgring is so important to me. I have done a lap of the Nürburgring before, and I will talk to you about that another time, probably on that video itself. But it's going to be a rite of passage, probably more so than you would expect. But I'll talk to you about that another time. Assume we've done 5 days at the ring now, and then we're heading back across Germany, and we're going to stay. So Nathan joins me at this point. So Nathan is the Alpine Formula One mechanic. He is. So if you're watching any Formula One from now on, you will see him quite a lot because he is the guy that pops the front of the car up. That's Nathan. So he joins us. He's either going to come out in his MX-5, his turboed MX-5, or his M135i. And Joe is out about what day he's joining still, because he's in Shanghai at the moment. But he's going to come and join us. And then we're going to head to Stuttgart. And I'm taking my car back to the Porsche factory and the Porsche Museum and getting some great footage and iconic shots of my car at its birthplace. We're also going to do a tour of the museum. I'll talk you through what my first experience of the museum's like, what my first experience of the restaurant's like, all that stuff. So if you're not located close to Germany, but you're considering doing that as a trip, then hopefully I'll give you a decent amount of insight as well, so you can figure out whether it's worth a trip. We may do the Mercedes Museum and the Schumacher stuff. We'll see how time goes. My preference is, or my kind of priority is, making sure we get the Porsche Museum done first. If there's more time available, then we'll obviously do that. Following morning, get up. We're staying. Oh, I was going to stay. I didn't share this before. I was going to stay in the B-Mine in Frankfurt, because you can drive your car into a lift and you can park your car right outside your room. But I actually was looking at which is really cool, right? What I didn't want to do is do such a detour, because the way it was looking geographically, I'd have had to go from the Nürburgring to Stuttgart, back to Frankfurt after we've done the museum, and then on to the next stop. It just geographically didn't make a great deal of sense going backwards and forwards like that. So I'm now staying at an Airbnb. It's bloody expensive as well to stay in that B-Mine hotel. So now we're staying in Stuttgart in an Airbnb, getting up the next morning, and then heading off again. And this is where we start tripping all the way back across Germany and France now. So heading to where I spent some time last year, Reims, or Reims as everybody calls it. And I just love that place so much. It felt so, I don't know, I felt like a connect to the past by being there. And it really brought to life what Formula One might have been like in the 50s and the 60s, and Fangio and Graham Hill, all those amazing drivers from back then, and Lauda, you know, all of those great guys. So, yeah, so I'm going to spend a bit of time there, but it's a stop off rather than actually staying overnight. Last year, I stayed overnight there. And then we're heading all the way. My French pronunciation is so shit, so I do apologize if you're French out there and thinking, why are you bastardizing my language? Rouen or Rouen or however you pronounce it. I think the first one was the best of the two pronunciations there. Staying in the Radisson Blue Spa Hotel, lovely hotel, really nice. That's my kind of, as I was saying before, about trying to spend a night in a really nice hotel before heading back home. That's the nice hotel. Because the only ever Grand Prix win from Porsche was that circuit, Rouen. So that circuit doesn't exist anymore. It was demolished a long time ago. There's not a great deal you can see from that circuit anymore. You can't just sort of see, like Rouen, you can't see the maintained architecture or you know, you can't basically drive the circuit as it was. It's now a normal road network. But not to be deterred by that, and lots of people go to Rouen and park up on the side, get an iconic photo and move on. I haven't seen anyone go out to look for the Rouen and fly a drone around, hunt for old parts of the circuit, do a bit of a history tour about why, you know, what happened in that race. So you can expect some content from me on that as well. So that's the intention there. I've got a great drone. I might as well use it. And I think there's a really opportunity to go and talk about Porsche's Formula One escapades from back in the day. So, and then that's it, pretty much. Get up in the next morning. And then to tie off the kind of World War II element of this is head over to Gold Beach, Sword Beach, Juno. The D-Day landing beaches, basically, and take a few minutes to pay some respects to all the tens of thousands of people that lost their lives on that day. So that's a stop off rather than a night overnight stay there, but there's enough time if we get up early to go and do that before we then drive back to Calais to jump on the Eurotunnel and head back to the UK. And then it's the unfortunate bit about the last bit of the journey, which it's always tough when you do a road trip like that. I found it really last year is that you've had such an amazing time and it's been such a great experience that last bit sucks because you're tired anyway. You know that you're not looking forward to anything. It's just finishing everything. And then the likelihood is you're going to have to kind of clean the car properly, unpack, you know, and then go back to work again and real life starts again. So there's going to be some happy times about reflecting on it. But yeah, I think I can imagine after that, I hope you think as well, epic trip, that actually you're going to naturally get some holiday blues. So I'll have to make sure I can get straight onto booking next year's one as well. That's it for me. It is, like I said, what have we done now? It's about 40 minutes, give or take. So it still actually ended up being a full length episode, funnily enough. I hope you've really enjoyed it though. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about the trip. Love to hear your thoughts actually. So you'll be able to follow, I'm going to post every bit of it. So head over to @RenEngineeringUK on Instagram and you can see the car and me and my mates. I'm having a cracking time doing all those trips and kind of going out to those different places. Obviously, I'm not going to share everything because I want you to watch the YouTube video when it goes live, but I will share as much as I can and talk you through how we're getting on with it. If you've got any feedback, anything I'm missing, if you think that, oh God, you're going there, why don't you go too? And there's a big gap. I would say 5 days at the ring. If the weather's shocking, I'd definitely welcome some hints and tips about what to do around that area when the weather's bad. Because there's no way in hell that I'm driving that car on a slippery ring. Excuse my French there. And yeah, so drop me a note and slide me a DM and tell me what you think I should do with that time if it's terrible weather. Same with Stuttgart as well. If you've got any great recommendations for restaurants or anything like that for that night, then do let me know. For now, what I encourage you to do, go on a road trip yourself. You know, it doesn't, obviously these European road trips that take in multiple countries, they are quite an expensive thing to do. That's not for you. What about mapping something in your local area? What about looking at your roads that you've got close to you that you might not have looked at properly before? Pick yourself a couple of hours if you can do that. Doesn't matter what car you're in. You could be in a Metro from the 80s, a McLaren F1, it doesn't matter. Whatever you've got, it's getting out there and using it and kind of winding the windows down and getting the, you know, it sort of connecting to nature a little bit. And joining up some friends as well and making the most of that time. It makes such a difference. It makes such a difference. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. As I said, it's a waffle. It's not there's no extra part to this. But I do hope you've enjoyed it anyway. The next time I speak to you, it will be on the road. It'll be I'll be actually in a full flight at that point. I think I'll probably be in the Nürburgring. So yeah, so you can join me next week from the Nürburgring. But for now, that's it from me. Take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.